So we'll make a start. Hopefully we'll get some sheets in 4 or 5 minutes. We're on part three of a three-part series dealing with the issue of the Pandora's box that we're opening and trying to close again today. I don't know if that's possible once you've opened it. Of women in Talmud Torah, women as Poskot and Yotzot Halacha, which we talked about last week, and women as rabbis. And the there is no doubt that this is a contemporary issue. Just yesterday on CNN, there was a major article about a woman Orthodox rabbi in America, a lady called Lila Kajdan, who has become the rabbi of the I can't remember, Jewish Center in New Jersey. And and the CNN article is actually very interesting indeed, because she refuses to be called Rabbah or Maharat or anything like that. She insists, look, let's call it what it is. I am a rabbi. I want to be a rabbi. I'm an Orthodox rabbi. This is an Orthodox community. And therefore, she is a serving rabbi in an Orthodox community with an Orthodox. She's the assistant rabbi. There's a senior rabbi, and he hired her. And this has obviously made news. Now, especially in light of the statement recently. She is a graduate of Yeshivat Maharat, which, as you know, is the Rabbi White's place in New York. And Rabbi Avraham, correct. And as I'm sure people are aware, he's had that institution open for a number of years now. Until now, everybody who's graduated from there has insisted on being called Rabbah or Maharat or something of this nature. But Rabbi Kajdan, Lila Kajdan, has decided that she doesn't want to have that. The RCA, of which I am a member and very proud to be a member, issued a resolution about 6 months ago, which when you get your sheets you'll see in the appendix on the back, very clearly and categorically prohibiting any kind of ordination of rabbis, saying it was against our Masorah, female rabbis, saying it was against our Masorah, and it was problematic on many levels. And when in a few minutes when you get the sheets, you will be able to see that in more detail. But what I want to do is I want to look with you today at some of the issues that arise on this particular issue. It's not coming back, is it? Is it going to get worse or better? It was okay this morning. Maybe a good cough is what I need. Hang on.
Can I get you some cocoa?
I have. I have, Baruch Hashem. See, that already is better. That's already better. Just the mention of some cocoa already brought something back. I've got hot water. I've had those. I've taken all the sweets and the candies and the this and the that. It's just a question of time and tefillah. You can dabble while I speak. It's okay, fine. The issue that I want to raise today really are as follows. First of all, is this sheets? Oh, Baruch Hashem, very nice. Thank you very much. So, let me help you give them out. Okay, fine. Maybe we could just share one between two for now. A fisherman's friend. Thank you very much. This will... Thank God I feel fine. I just take one of these. I apologize for the sheets. They will be. They are doing more. What happened is that the attachment on the email, for some reason, didn't go through. You know, computers have a mind on their own. But then they found it. I now have a fisherman's friend which is helping me to... I might not be able to speak, but I'll be able to catch fish. Oh, here's lots and lots of sheep here. On the topic of the RCA resolution, please could you turn to the back of the sheet to the appendix and see basically what they said. They passed the resolution in 2010, which appears at the top. At the 8th, the very last page of the sheet, where it says Appendix Rabbinical Council of America 2015 Policy. So they passed a resolution in 2010, which praises women's learning and advanced women's education, etc. And they passed another resolution in 2013, which appears in the middle there, because of Yeshivat Ma'arat, when it brought out its ordination of women clergy. And therefore it then passed a new one in 2015 at the bottom, where it says, the Rabbinical Council of America resolves to educate and inform our community that RCA members with positions in Orthodox institutions may not, one, ordain women into the Orthodox rabbinate, regardless of the title used, two, hire or ratify the hiring of women into a rabbinic position at an Orthodox institution, or three, allow a title implying rabbinic ordination to be used by a teacher of Limudei Kodesh in an Orthodox institution. So that's pretty broad. Yes, the back page at the bottom where it says 1, 2 and 3 at the bottom. And basically it commits to an effort to publicize this policy by republishing its policies and clearly communicating them. However, it says very clearly at the bottom that doesn't in any way affect non-rabbinic positions such as Yoatzot Halacha, which it wants to make very clear it doesn't in any way have an institutional policy against. Community scholars, i.e. women educators coming to communities. Yeshiva University's GPAS, that's the Advanced Talmudic Studies graduate program, okay, as long as no rabbinic title is used. Now, in many ways this is a very uncontroversial statement. It just simply restates that there is no place for women clergy within the Orthodox world. In some ways it was quite controversial because there was a lot of debate internally within the RCA. I don't think I'm giving away any inside information when I say this, as to whether it was or wasn't appropriate to issue this resolution at this time. Meaning everybody understands that the Orthodox position of the RCA and other modern Orthodox and centrist Orthodox institutions is that women rabbis are not acceptable right now. The question is, to what extent should we be pushing this as a fundamental agenda issue, or to what extent should we be waiting to see how this plays itself out? Which is what I really want to talk a little bit about today, and really see if we can find a way through this minefield in a way which hopefully will never make everybody happy, that's for sure, but we may be able to cast a little bit of light on this and see in which direction it's likely to go. If you could turn back to page 1, please, and we'll now go in order through. The Hashgafi considerations, which I left you with last time, I think we ought to start, which is at the very beginning at A. And then we can look at some halachic issues as well. Let's just reiterate on these. Should there be women rabbis? Not can there would be rabbis. Should there be women rabbis? Where is that pressure coming from? Good place? Or a less good place? And I'm not sure we can answer these necessarily, but these are thoughts that we should have. Is there some kind of overarching non-halachic imperative to avoid any kind of new innovation? What is our Masorah? One of the things that the RCA statement said is it goes against Masorah to have women rabbis. How do we define Masorah? What goes against our Masorah? Does our Masorah ever change? And if so, how? And if it changed then, can it change here? Okay? I don't think it's good enough just to make a statement, Masorah never changes, because we can see that that's obviously, it's more complicated than that sounds. What about slippery slope arguments, like we mentioned last week? If we allow this, then what? Okay. Although it's difficult to see, if we have women rabbis, what the next concern step would be. What are we worried about next? I suppose a breakdown generally of halachic norms. So today women rabbis, tomorrow no mechitza, the day after, etc., etc. Is that a real concern? And other issues, where do we go with our women who have great talent in the community? How do we help them to realize that and develop careers in Torah? Are we just engendering frustration? We talked about all this last time. I'll leave you to read some of that for yourselves. But today I really want to look at the issue of rabbis as rabbis. What is the problem, halachically and hashkafically, with women being rabbis of community? I'm not talking about poskim or poskot, I'm not talking about teachers, I'm talking about the leaders of the community rabbis with that name. So I broke down in B, maybe 8, 9 or 10 of the things that community rabbis do. And one could have a technical analysis as to whether this is applicable to women or not. Some of them we've talked about: receiving a smicha, ruling in halakha, leading the prayer services. Now, is that a rabbi's job? Not really, but that's what rabbis do from time to time. Conducting weddings and funerals, etc. Reading from the Torah, giving sermons in shul, pastoral work, counseling, education, teaching Torah, providing guidance in theology, public communal leadership, sitting on a beis din. Now, some of those we've talked about. Some of those are obviously things that women are halachically prohibited from doing. Okay? We talked about sitting on the beis din, we talked about receiving smicha last time. Some of those are things that rabbis do that women obviously already do, to a very large degree. A lot of the counseling work, a lot of the guidance, a lot of the teaching in communities has for many, many, for forever really, been done by the female part of the team, meaning the Rebbetzin and others. And some of those clearly are halachically very completely problematic. You cannot have a woman leading prayer services, at least for most parts of the prayer services. That's very clear in halacha, although we need to have a longer conversation about that, which is not for today. Women receiving aliyot, etc., is also a discrete topic in and of itself. But none of these things are really central to the issue of rabbi. Could you have a rabbi, for example, that didn't count towards the minyan? It sounds very strange, okay, but is that, let's say you say, no, minyan is inviolable, okay, we're not going to mess with minyan is a clear halacha, women don't count for a minyan. But is there such a thing as the rabbi that doesn't count for the minyan? So that is a separate issue, which again, well, yes?
That could be fine with you for itself.
Because today we'll not count the rabbi for the minyan, but tomorrow people will say it's ridiculous, how can we not count the rabbi for the minyan? And then all of a sudden there are going to be 9 men and a woman davening. Yes, that's definitely a real concern without any question at all. The real issue halachically when it comes to rabbinic leadership by women, I think, is the issue which I've dealt with in number in E, which is women in communal leadership positions. And let's look at that together now for a few minutes. There is a pasuk in the Torah, in the Sefer Torim, Sasim alecha melech asher yibcha Hashem Elokecha voim mikerev achecha. Appoint yourselves a king, okay, a melech. And if you look over the page on page 2, please, the Sifrei very clearly rules melech velo malkah. There's no such thing as a Jewish queen. You can have the wife of the king, okay, we've had that in the past, Shlom Tzion HaMalkah, but she was not a Malkah in her own right. She was a Malkah because she was married to Yanai HaMelech. And even though when he died she did take over for a while, she was not classically a Malkah. I mean, the question is whether Yanai HaMelech was even a Melech, because he wasn't from Beit David, and therefore that's a whole other story which I'm not getting into now. But Melech Velo Malkah. The Gemara in Kiddushin wants to expand this not just to the king but to other appointments as well. For example, number 3, Tanina, says the Gemara in Kiddushin, Sam Tassim Alecha Melech Mikerev Achecha Kol Mesimot Sha'ata Mesim. Any appointments that you make, not just the king can only be from your brothers, meaning a Jewish person. You cannot have a non-Jewish person. Maybe even a ger is going to be a shayla, a convert, as a somebody representing the community. And there is a lesser known midrash called the Midrash Tanayim, which actually expands that explicitly to women. Okay, number four. Son tasim alech hamelech b'loy malka. Malamit she'ein ma'amidin isha b'malchus. V'chein kol mesimot shebi Yisrael. Any position of leadership in Israel, ein m'amim b'hem ela ish. That's fairly explicit. Although it's a much, it's a lesser known source, and it's not as authoritative as the Gemara, yes.
What about
Devorah? We'll get to Devorah in number 6 to 7 in just a moment. What makes this most important is that the Rambam paskens this way. If the Rambam had not paskened this way, I think it would have been more of a sideline issue. But the Rambam indeed does in number 5. In number 5. This is the famous line in the Rambam which causes a lot of these issues. So he says it can't be a Jewish queen. So too says the Rambam, any appointments over the Jewish people, he says it very clearly. And based on the Rambam and many other Rishonim that support the Rambam, although we'll see in a minute it's not unanimous, the Poskim have classically ruled that any position of leadership in the Jewish people has to be a man and not a woman. This has been true historically, not only of obviously rabbis, but also of community presidents and the leaders of all major Jewish institutions. The question is, first of all, about Devorah. How do we deal with Devorah? And we'll see there are at least four answers given about Devorah, and we'll look at them right now. They're quite short, and we'll see if they have an impact on the way that this works today. Quick number 6. This is the Radvaz commenting on the Rambam there. The Radvaz is Rav David Ibn Zimra. He's a couple of hundred years after the Rambam. So he says the following. In Taima, if you want to ask, Haksiv or Devorah Isha Nevi'ah, he's Shofetah in Israel. How did Devorah become the Shofetet of Israel if all leaders have to be male? Lo Kasha, that's not a problem, he says. Shehaita melamedet lehem hamishpatim. She was a teacher. That's his first answer. She was a teacher. She wasn't a leader, Shofetah. He means she taught the halacha. Inami, alternatively, answer number 2. Alpi hadibur haya. She was a Nevi'ah, and that was an exception. Meaning she was told by God that she could be the leader, but if you're a Nevi'ah, then you can apply for the local position of rabbi if you like. But if you're not a Nevi'ah, then forget about it. Because that's an exception, if you like, that proves the rule. The Ritva gives 2 other answers to this in number 7. And the Ritva says something which is maybe more important for today's position. Okay, number 7. He says like this, Umasha Amar Kosaval Zvera Behishafatayt Yisrael, Uksiv Nami Bialu Aleha B'nei Yisrael Abishfat. Zehayu Mitnagim Al Pia Lobe Torat Minui. She wasn't appointed, he says, but they just did what she said because they liked her. We'll see in a minute what that means. The Hamrina Mesifrei, Son Tasim Alecha Melech Aloy Malka, for who had in the Shar Mesimot. He basically supports the Rambam. You cannot have a Jewish appointed woman as the leader of the community. But they accepted her Eitza. Number 1, either she was not a leader but she was an advisor, or they accepted her as a Kabbalah. Like I mentioned to you last week, in the event that the people who are facing this, if you like, disqualified leader turn around and say, oh, we're happy to accept them. For example, if a judge is technically disqualified because they're related to one of the parties, the litigants can both agree, well, we don't mind. We're happy to have that judge represent us, even though they're related to the parties. So too, even though Devorah was technically disqualified as a leader, the people said, well, we don't care about that. We're happy to have her as a leader, even though technically she doesn't qualify, and therefore that's good enough for us. Says the Ritva, that works. And therefore the question will come on this particular halachic issue. Let's say today someone turns around and says, yes, a woman isn't qualified technically to be the leader because of the Rambam, but we don't mind. We're quite happy as a community to forego that technicality and accept this woman as our leader. Would that carry any weight? And it could be that based on what we've seen, that that would carry some weight. Rav Moshe Feinstein deals with this issue in a very interesting context. Rav Moshe is faced with a case of a woman, this is in source 8 at the bottom of the page, where a woman has inherited a position as the head of a kashrus organization. And he wants the kashrut organization. Excuse me. And he has been asked here, is that legitimate or is she disqualified because she has to be a man? So look at what he says here in number 8. Says Rosh, not Rav Moshe. This is the end of a long and detailed shuva. Sof davar. At the end of the day, he says, Av sheyesh harbe rishonim hasofrim ta Rambam. Even though there are many, many rishonim that rule like the Rambam, that this would be disqualified. Aval, Rashi, Vatosis, Varosh, Varan, Varamban, please. There's a significant body of rishonim that disagree and say that this is not the case and a woman can be a community leader. Umistaber shekainso vegam harashba, and he thinks the Rashba holds like that too. He says, for sure I feel that we should pass them like the Rambam, that women are not acceptable as community leaders, Udine and those who hold like him, which are many. He says, it is a machlo, because we're going to go on this in a strict way. This may even be a question of a doraita. If they're learning out from Melech Velo Malka, that's a pasuk, it's not clear whether this is or isn't a doraita. He says, especially if there is going to be an issue of yichud or kedoma the hashkacha. He says, but in terms of the hashkacha, shenishalti the organization that I've been asked about, hari ika ha'etiku im nashim. Most of the work is going to be with women. The loishai klam nidon inyan yichud, and I'm not worried about yichud. Ulechein, and therefore he rules. Letzorich gadol, when there is a significant need, bishvil chiyut ha'alana. In this case, because this woman has no panosa, this woman has no money. Uvaneha and the children that she has. Hayashaych lismoch ala cholkim, says Rav Moshe, I think we can rely on those who disagree with Rambam ala Rambam. Like in all situations where there's a significant minority opinion, in a situation of need, he says, I think we can rely on the minority opinion. I found another answer in this particular case that means I don't have to rely on the other side. But if I had to, I would, he says. Therefore, on the issue of whether women are allowed to be community leaders, which is a real halachic issue, there are clearly two shitot on this. There's a majority opinion, the Rambam and others like him, and this is how Rav Moshe wants to rule, and this is how most people have ruled, that a woman is not qualified to be halachically a leader of the community. However, there is a significant body of opinion that holds otherwise, and Rav Moshe himself, although there's no question he would not have been supportive of women rabbis, and there's any suggestion of that at all. But Rav Moshe, in terms of leadership positions, was prepared to countenance relying on the minority opinion in certain cases. Now, this has become very relevant over the years on the issue of women as presidents of communities. And this is an issue on which there has been significant movement, depending on which community you're in. For example, in London, classically, the position was always the London-based in rule that women were not able to be presidents of communities. Now, that position was reversed in 2012. And that reversal was not just because the London-based changed their mind. That's not how it works. It's because there was a significant difference of opinion within the Rishonim, and at a certain point it becomes legitimate to rely on that minority opinion and allow something which perhaps wasn't necessary up until then. That is absolutely legitimate and part of the halachic process, as long as the people who are making that decision are the people who have responsibility for the halachic process. That's what we call Masorah, and we'll talk about this more in a little bit. Masorah doesn't just mean that we did things the same way that we always did them. Masorah means that we have a process. Some things cannot be changed. some things may be changed under certain circumstances by certain people. That's Masorah. And we see that that's happened in terms of women's presidents. Now, in certain communities in America, I believe, it's still not possible for women to be presidents of communities. I mean, even in the central North, not true. But I think there's a mixed picture there. Yes.
Interpretation that if there is need, is it the need of the community?
Good question.
Or is it the need of the individual?
Good question.
What was the question?
What is need in terms of under what circumstances can you rely on? Rav Moshe says that there's a case of need, you can rely on the other opinion. Well, in the case of this particular tumor, it was the need of the woman involved. But in the case of the London situation, the England situation, I don't think it's the need of this particular woman to be the president of the community. It's the need of the community to have women presidents. That seems to be clearly what's happened there. In a society where women are leaders across the board in business, industry, and in politics, it's fairly likely that you'll end up with a female president of the United States by the end of this year. I don't want to upset your, you know, put you off your lunch or anything, but and I'm certainly not making any political comment. I don't even have a vote. But in a world in which women lead the community, that's definitely something to be borne in mind. I did want to mention again a position that I brought last week of Rav Bakshi Doron in number 9. Please turn to page number 9. Source number 9, page number 3. page number 3, source number 9. I'm actually running a little bit low on water. I wonder if somebody would mind getting me a refill. Trevor, are you on it?
No.
Thank you very much. Just a touch of gin in the bottom, if you don't mind. Rav Bakshi Doron, in source number 9, says an interesting thing. Milvad Aftadin Ashonim Lehete Sheizkaru, Shinizkar Banhagat Geirim. Apart from the issue of Geirim leading the community, he says, Yesh Lahashim Shahaisa Bimin Nashim, when it comes to women, Lahavkidim Shonim, to appoint them for various different purposes, Kalyoter. It's actually easier than appointing Geirim. Mishon Etzem Haisa Shinu Bimachlok, Shalom Bimachlokas. Thank you so much, Trevor. I appreciate it greatly. Thank you. Because he says, actually, as we've seen, there is a significant machlokus on this. And he concludes, Bikol ha'amur, from everything that we've seen so far, Nirashe isha v'ger yucholim l'shamesh kemanhigim. He says, I feel that women are halachically allowed to be leaders. Afilu kebidoyle hador, even to lead the whole community. Because it's their ability to lead, which is relevant here, rather than whether they're men or women. Those appointments, he says, where those appointments are relevant because of the qualities of the people appointed, you're naked, we have kishronim. Therefore, there are clearly in the modern world opinions that feel that this is less of a halachic problem. This became relevant when it came to women voting early on in the 20th century, around 100 years ago, when women's voting became a reality. When the new Yishuv in Israel was first voting for its leaders in the early 1920s, there was a decision made as to whether women could or could not take part in the vote. And a number of the leading poskim of the time were consulted, including Rav Kook and others. Almost everybody concluded that, in fact, women were not allowed to vote. And we'll see more about that in a minute. Rabbi Chil Yaakov Weinberg in Germany in the 1930s, was asked about that further, and he said, look, he doesn't see any reason why women would be inappropriate to lead communities, halachically in the 1930s, but he says, since there was a consensus at that time that it was not samnua, and we'll deal with the issue of tzniut right now, or appropriate, and the issue of propriety is obviously one that needs to be discussed as well. He felt that in the 1930s there should be no change in that policy. Later in the 1960s, he was asked again, and he said, interestingly, he felt the matter should be left to work itself out, which is very interesting, because he felt that it was, to a large degree, time that needed to be applied to this to give it the resolution that it needed to have. There's another issue, of course, which we haven't really discussed, which I want to raise, is this issue of sarara, whether a woman is allowed to be the community leader. Does this apply to modern day leadership positions which are elected or and which are not permanent and which are not inherited and which person is under a limited employment contract subject to removal? It's hardly like a melech or a malka in the sense that the melech cannot be sacked for being a bad melech or have somebody else appointed in their place without a coup d'etat. And therefore there is a significant debate as to whether this sarara issue is the real issue. This is really the most halachically relevant issue, but there's a question as to really how that applies to modern day appointments, and the bottom line is that the Rambam is the psak which is mostly used, but we've seen that there is a legitimate minority opinion, and that might be relevant in a situation of need which we've discussed. Please turn to page number 4. Let's talk about the elephant in the room, which is tzniut. Is it tzniut for a woman to be a leader of the community? And if you look at some of the writings on this, you'll see that this is given as a real issue. Rav Herschel Schachter has... I brought you at the end, by the way, you don't need to turn to it now, some further reading, and I've included some articles by Rav Schachter. I've tried to give you a broad range of different articles from within the Orthodox world on this, some more left-wing, some more right-wing. You'll see that at the end of the sheet, together with some sources there. You can find those articles on the internet. But Rav Schachter has an article on this where he clearly says one of the main issues is tzniut. It's simply not tzniut to have a woman as the rabbi of a community. And I just want to examine that for a few minutes and see how that works. One of the arguments he makes there is that tzniut is an overall imperative. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is tzniut. Look at number 11. Achein ata keil mistater. You are a God who hides himself. Elokei Yisrael Moshe. There is an inyan to be hidden on some way, in some way, and community leadership is the opposite of hidden. Meaning, we do our best to try and avoid leadership if we can, and if we can't, and if we need to be leaders, then of course we must. But there is an idea to try and run away from that. Look at number 12. Shemaya Omer, Oyhe Beit HaMalacha, you should enjoy hard work, or snare to Rabbonis, but you should try and avoid community leadership, says Rav Avadya B'Bar Tanura. Hitrachek, stay as far as you can, meaning Hag Sarara Alatibor, from being in charge of the Jewish people. Sheharabonis Mekarabet et Baalea, Mekaberet et Baalea. Because Rabbonis leads its leaders to an early grave. And I know in a number of situations that that's definitely happened to people where their communities have driven them so mad that they never have lived the life perhaps that they should. And therefore, Pirkei Avos knows what it's talking about when it says avoid Rabbonus. Since, and Yosef himself, is, in his early death, before the brothers, is seen many ways as being the result of his leadership situation. And therefore, there is, if you like, a Jewish imperative to run away from leadership. And maybe this is true even more of women. There is the concept of, number 13, Kol Kvuda Bas Melech Pnima. What does that mean exactly? That the Kavod for the Bat Melech is inside rather than outside. This is not a halachic concept as such, but it is a hashkafic concept, and I brought you here a line from Rabbi, or a few lines from Rabbi David Bleich. Rabbi J. David Bleich, I'm sure is well known to most of you, has an article on women in synagogue boards. And he says here in number 14, the halacha, a king but not a queen, appears to be a reflection of the religious social ideal kol kvuda bas melech pnina. He puts them together. He says melech v'loy malka is actually coming from kol kvuda bas melech pnina. The entire glory of the king's daughter is within. Various explanations have been offered in attempts to formulate the philosophical basis of this idea. Such explanations are based on an analysis of the concept of tzniut in all its ramifications. Suffice it to say, the ideal of kol kvoda notwithstanding, women were never barred from seeking gainful employment or engaging in commerce. Indeed, there are virtually no halachic restrictions placed upon a woman seeking a career outside the home. Nevertheless, The kol kvoid, the concept, does find expression in halacha. This expression is perhaps more a matter of form than substance, but it's significant nonetheless. What does he mean by that? It's more a matter of form than substance. Meaning you might not be able to point to a specific halacha in Shulchan Aruch that says women should not do X or Y, in terms of career or public role, but nevertheless there is an underlying hashkafic, if you like, imperative. It would appear that the restriction a king but not a queen is designed to give formal recognition to Kalkafud as an ideal, if not a norm. It is precisely in the public arena, in the holding of public office, and thereby commanding constant public attention, that the Torah saw the greatest possible violation of feminine tzniut. Of course, this restriction in no way guarantees the approximation, much less the realization of the ideal, but it does serve to emphasize the principle as a halachic desideratum, and as such, the form is as significant as the substance. Now, how do we take that, and how does that apply today? This was written in 1976. 1976, in many ways, feels as though it should be yesterday, but actually is 40 years ago. The question is, to what extent does these words ring true today in the same way as maybe they rang true in 1976? Has the public role of women significantly changed since 1976? 40 years ago, yes. It's quite a surprise, isn't it, that 1976 is 40 years ago. halachically speaking, the concept of tznius is incredibly difficult to pin down, because Chazal created it consciously in a way that is fairly subjective. They created this concept of datihudit. Datihudit, which literally means Jewish practice. It's not das with an I, it's das without an I, meaning Jewish law. And yehudit just means Jewish. It doesn't mean, it's nothing to do with women specifically, because das is a feminine word. And there is a concept in halacha of datihudit, which is the way that Chazal defines tzniut. Look at number 15. The Rambam rules here in Hilchos Ishus. Eidehi datihudit. What is datihudit? Hu minhag tzniut shenahagu b'nei Yisrael. B'not Yisrael. Truth is, it's not just b'nei, but not Yisrael. It's also b'nei Yisrael. And the datihudit applies to men and to women in many ways. But it's mostly appears in women because it's a sugya in Ksubas that deals with a woman as a Ksuba. Rashi defines datihudit, number 16, as datihudit shenahagu b'not Yisrael, the af al gav delok tiva, even though you won't find it written down, this is the minhag of b'not Yisrael throughout the ages. And as such, it changes from community to community and from age to age. Meaning Chazal didn't feel it was possible to create laws of tzniut in all of their details that are objective for all time. They created some when it comes to the way that people have to dress in public, and they left most of the rest to the community to decide. Is it appropriate to wear this colour, that colour? Is it appropriate to do this, to do that? Tights, not tights, shoes, open, closed. These are all things which are very society related. And a lack of understanding of this sometimes leads to a lack of understanding of things generally. Therefore, different societies will define in many ways what isn't appropriate for the women in that society to do. So let's ask the question, is it appropriate for a woman to stand in front of a group of men and give a drosha and teach a shiur? Is that sanua or is that not sanua? Now that question cannot be answered yes or no, can it?
It depends
on what? And men, anashi. It depends on a lot of things. It depends on the community, it depends on the context, it depends on the people there, it depends on her, it depends on many, many things. Yes?
I don't know, but in the
Sure. The Chamalei Mitz frequently gave shirim in a mixed crowd, as far as I'm aware, and that's very common. There are all sorts of speakers who speak all around the world. Rabbi Sneska Jungreis gives shirim all around the world in mixed audiences. You mean Ms. Rachi, she speaks only to women or to men as well? Only to women? I've only ever seen her advertised to women, but I don't know all the details. The point is, though, in America, it's very much accepted in many communities that a woman can stand and give a shiur in front of the men, and therefore using sneers as an argument is a difficult one, because it's a moving target. And therefore, I think that that's something that should be borne in mind, but it cannot be definitive in that sense. There's a lot more to say about sneers. I actually have three shirim just specifically on sneers, but I'm not talking about that more now. But I don't think it's possible to use sneers as the answer on this question, because it really is somewhat subjective, yes.
Take the case of Zavara. It could be viewed as the exception, could also be viewed as a precedent.
Right. Meaning an appropriate person in an appropriate scenario. Correct. And Dati Hudit is, again, as I said, not something that you will be able to define for all places. Let's talk a little bit about Masora. Let's talk a little bit about Masora on page 5. There is a... I brought you here a nice piece from Rabbi Avraham Gordimer. Rabbi Gordimer is a very outspoken rabbi who writes a lot of very interesting stuff. I've given you some of his articles at the back. He writes quite frequently on Cross Currents. I don't know him personally. A number of people here may know him. He's quite well known in the RCA, and he's a significant voice. He has quite a public persona, if you like, in the fight against open orthodoxy. There's a lot of this going on at the moment in America, as I'm sure you're aware. Even in the last week alone, there's been a significant repartee, if you like, between Rabbi Gordimer and Rabbi Mark Shapiro. You may know Rabbi Mark Shapiro. He is perhaps on the more open orthodox side of the American centrist orthodox community, and they have been sparring in public on the blogs over the last week or two in different ways, which I think has produced more light than heat in many ways, which is very good. But he writes about Masora. I don't have the voice to read the whole thing out for you today, but I want you to read this for yourselves later, and maybe have a look at its at the second paragraph here. The entirety of traditional Jewish religious life, including its age-old ritual norms and societal norms, even if they lack formal codification, reflect Torah values, be they halachic or hashkafic. Every aspect of our multi-millennia traditional religious communal modality, is embedded in or predicated upon halachic or hashkafic axioms. These axioms may not be apparent to the uninitiated, yet failure to perceive them does not grant license to negate, dismiss, or reform. The fact that we are not aware of a strict halachic basis for millennia-old Torah practice does not allow us to contest the practice or discard it. Our adherence to such practices is based upon Masora. And Masora is based upon halachic or hashkafic reasoning that often has not been popularized or formulated for mass consumption, thereby making it elusive, say, to those Talmidei Chachamim who have the requisite knowledge and insight. Now, that's quite conservative speaking, with a little c. He's basically saying that everything we do, even if we don't know why we do it, is done for a good reason and cannot be changed. Or at least, if it is going to be changed, it can only be changed by people who really understand why we do it. Right. And I think that he's writing in response to Jofa, which I understand why he's writing this. Jofa, the Jewish Orthodox Feminist Alliance, famous, maybe infamous line by Glute Greenberg many years ago, where there is a rabbinic will, there is a halachic way. He's writing against that, because quite clearly that line, where there is a rabbinic will, there's a halachic way, is complete nonsense. That's not true at all. And that basically creates a paradigm which Jofa really perpetuates, which is that really the rabbis can do whatever they like. They just keep this jar of candies very close to their chest, and they won't open it. And if you nudge them enough, every now and then they'll open the jar and throw you a candy, and then close it very tightly, say, that's all, you can't have any more for now. And you just have to apply pressure.
What organization?
Jofa, the Jewish Orthodox Feminist Alliance. Somebody once put it like this, you know, Judaism is like orthodontics. If you apply enough pressure over long enough time, you could move anything anywhere. but if you apply too much pressure too quickly, you'll break the teeth. So there's an element of truth to that. Jofa, of course, is wrong in saying that where there's a halachic will, a rabbinic will, that's a halachic way. That's nonsense. Rabbi Gordimer is trying to counter that by saying everything we do basically is Masora, and it's not changeable. And with respect to Rabbi Gordimer, I think he's overstated the point there. Surely there is a middle ground, which is that some things can't change and some things can. Some things won't and some things will. Meaning something which is based on the system of Torah and mitzvahs, as in the Pesukim, or based on the Gemara, as codified and sealed and accepted by the Jewish people, is not going to change, in the case of the Torah, you know, Pesukim, ever, unless God, of course, Baruch Hu gets us back to Har Sinai and starts over again, which, by the way, is a debate as to whether that could happen, but not for now, okay? It's not happening tomorrow morning. And in terms of the Gemara, that's not going to change until there's a new Sanhedrin, which could happen, but it's not happening today, okay? Tomorrow I can't tell you that, but today not. But there are other things which do not depend upon the Pesukim and the Gemara. There are areas on which there's a machlokas, where there is a genuine possibility of following other opinions, and we just need the senior poskim of our time to do that. I'll give you as an example, women's education that we talked about last week and the week before was a significant Masora issue. We had no Masora of mass women's education, clearly not, and now we do. How did that change? And the answer is, that was one of the things that could and did. Because it wasn't codified in the Pesukim, it wasn't codified in the Gemara, it was something on which there were different opinions, and the senior poskim of our time took the responsibility upon themselves to institute a change. And that's how Masora does change. So, to make a statement that nothing ever does, and to make a statement that everything can, I think are both two extremes. Did you have a question? They really didn't want the men to think the women were in charge?
A husband or wife would take different positions. One would be a Republican, the other would be a Democrat. And we're ruined with Shalom bias.
That's interesting. That's interesting. I brought you on the women's voting issue, which I'm not going to get into now, but I brought you the piece from Rav Kook. Where is that? Yes, number 18. There, yes. On the top there, I brought you that piece from Rav Kook, which you can read in your own time. He was concerned about tzniut, he was concerned about srara, he was concerned about people mixing at the voting booths. But women's voting is actually a very interesting example, because even though there was unanimity 100 years ago that women's voting was against our Masora, today women vote, and that's accepted by all parts of the community. So I think it is clear to see from here that there are aspects that do and perhaps will change and some things that will not. Let's have a look at page 6 and bring things to a close. I'm just about juicing into my voice for 5 more minutes, which is all that we need. I think it's important to see that there are very significant meta-halachic and hashkafic issues at stake as well. And I just want to mention some of these before we finish. First of all, we don't just decide these issues based on technical halacha. There are Jewish values, there are meta-halachic issues which have to kick in here. Look at this piece by Rav Meir Twersky in number 20. This is talking about women's tefillah groups some time ago. The discussion regarding women's tefillah groups has regrettably focused excessively on technical issues and legalities. It has been framed by limited halachic queries such as, may the participants forgo tefillah b'tzibur to attend these groups, may menstrual women touch Sifrei Torah. Undoubtedly, such technical perspectives and narrow questions are necessary to ensure our compliance with all minutiae halacha. Torah, however, consists not only of halachic details, but also of halachic values. Unfortunately, the latter have been neglected in the discussion concerning women's tefillah groups. When halacha is fragmented and truncated in such a fashion, it can neither be interpreted or implemented correctly. The approach of Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal differed. The Rav's consistent opposition to women's tefillah groups was dictated by halachic values, not by halachic details. And I think that's important, that you cannot just summarize Judaism in a technical halachic argument. Part of what we've called Masora is this value system. And that's very hard to summarize quickly. What are our values when it comes to women rabbis?
Women
rabbis. How do those values impact upon that? One thing is for sure, we can't answer the question just by technical halachic concerns. I brought you some of those values which may weigh in on this issue on the last page, on page 7. Let's have a look at those for a minute. A few questions. women rabbis would never be able to fulfill all the roles of communal rabbi. For example, as we said, she couldn't count towards a minyan. Would their ordination of women rabbis therefore lead to frustration? Would that impose pressure to pursue non-halachic choices? Would it lead to men who are less able being appointed because they can do more of the work than women who are more able? It might be counterproductive in some ways. Another point which is very important is women rabbis would obviously be rejected entirely by a large part of the Orthodox world. Would the cost of that machlokas outweigh the benefit of ordaining the rabbis? And that's a question which only the people who are really bearing the responsibility for the community as a whole can decide. It's all very well for certain individual pressure groups to demand now we need this or we need that. But what about the effect that's going to have on the Jewish people, on Klal Yisrael as a whole? At what point does the benefit justify the costs? And that's an important question to which someone has to think of some answers. There's another point which is very important, which is that anything that we do that looks as though it's giving credence to or supporting or strengthening sectarian groups, Chazal were very concerned about. Very concerned about. And therefore, we should be, because if every 50 years or so we updated and modernized Judaism, Judaism would very quickly be outdated and redundant. And there are a number of examples. I brought you one at number 23, which is that Chazal were very concerned about shechting into a pit. You're not allowed to shecht into a pit. Why not? According to the strict rules of Shechita, you can shecht in whatever way you want in terms of where you're standing, inside, outside, in a pit, and on the pit. It doesn't make any difference. The point is that there were breakaway groups that insisted that you had to shecht into a pit. So says the Gemara here, but in public, you can't do anything that looks like that. Why? Because you cannot give support publicly, even if it's a shkiyot, even if it's not really important, but people perceive it. Oh, you see, they're doing something which is a step towards whatever agenda people have. That is a real concern to us. It's not irrelevant. Now, it cannot be used as an excuse to never change anything. And in the past, things have changed. For example, Bat Mitzvah, where this was a real concern, and we talked about that, has now been, I think, seen 150 years later, whatever, to have been quite a positive thing in many ways. So you can't always argue that it looks like reform and therefore you can't do it. But the argument has to be very carefully considered. Rabbis agonized in the 19th century about bringing organs into shuls. Not even on Shabbos, just bringing an organ into shuls. Or in any way making the shul look more like a church. On a strict halakhic level, what's the problem? You have an organ, you don't have an organ. But everybody knows where that was coming from. It was coming from a deep-seated need to make us more like whoever it was. Therefore, that is a real concern. And therefore I put here other questions. Is the pressure for women rabbis coming from a secularist, feminist, egalitarian agenda? To what extent are desires for innovation required to be l'shem shamayim? I think 7 here is an important point here as well. Or rather 8. To what extent are the arguments for wider women's rabbinic roles undermined or even delegitimized by radical and in many cases clearly non-orthodox views or associations of some of the main proponents of the progressive agenda? And I think that's an important point. Many of the people who are pushing in places like Yeshiva Schol Avei Torah and Yeshivat Maharat, many, probably most, or maybe even all of these people are fine, upstanding, l'shem shamayim, honest people. But some of them have very, very radical views on issues, nothing necessarily to do with this. Some of those views are clearly well outside the parameters of Orthodox Judaism. Does that matter that the people who are pushing for this also think that? Or maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe the issues are separate and have to be dealt with separately. So some people, they may obviously get scared by the fact that, look, they're pushing for this and look at what else they think. And there's a lot of nightmare stuff going on out there. And that's a question. I'd like to leave the shir with the words of Rabbi Lam, because I actually think the Rabbi Lam says it very beautifully in number 24. This is in an interview he gave about 5 years ago. He says like this: there are certain things that are acceptable only in the long run. I approve of the idea of increasing the role of women in religious life, and I think it is an important one. At the same time, things have to be done gradually. To have a woman learn Gemara a generation or two ago, like women learn Gemara today, would have been too revolutionary. But with time, things change. Time answers a lot of questions, erodes discomfort, and helps. So my answer when I was asked by a reporter about what I think about women rabbis was basically, it's going too fast. I did not say it was wrong. I did not say it was right. It just does not pace itself properly. I was criticized, of course. People asked, oh, you mean LP Din that they're allowed to become rabbis? My response, I don't know. Are you sure they're not allowed to? And I like the way he says that. And therefore, like on these issues, I do apologize for my croakiness, but nevertheless, I think better than nothing. Next week we'll go on to an entirely different topic, Be'ezras Hashem. And to remind you, there is a shiur also the week before Pesach. That's 2 weeks from today, there will still be a shiur. Yes? Even the Wednesday, all the way up to the wire, we'll have a shiurim. The only shiur we won't be having is Chol HaMoed. It's not in Chol HaMoed, but immediately after Pesach, we'll start back up again in Be'ezras Hashem. The shiur before Pesach will have a Pesach theme, so something to look forward to there.